You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
At 20 minutes past 11 this Monday morning, we invite you to join us for the next 40 minutes as we navigate what is and must be a very difficult conversation if you've ever had to have it, where you have to tell your children, whether they're young children or adolescents, that they have cancer and dealing with issues of mortality. Or if you are a parent who has been diagnosed with cancer and you having to tell young children particularly that this is the case. We invite your calls on 021-446-0567 or 11883. 0702. Joining us in our Joburg studios is clinical psychologist and board member of SADAG, Zamo Mbele. Zamo, very good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning to you and good morning to your listeners.
It must be one of the most harrowing and most difficult conversations for any parent to have with their child if they have to tell them, my dear child, you've been diagnosed with a form of cancer that may very well see you dead in the next couple of months, years, whatever the case may be.
It is a difficult conversation to have as a parent, right? Just to imagine to have that conversation. And then it's one very complex to have with a child, because you also have to consider where they are, what they understand, what they do not understand, and their fears for them. And of course, perhaps just to begin by saying, it's actually not just a difficult conversation. It's a difficult series of conversations, because of course you need to have more than once, in order to really make sense of this.
How do you even begin that conversation? What do you do?
I guess you begin by empowering yourself and equipping yourself with two forms of information. The first one is, what is this cancer? What is my child struggling with? What have they been diagnosed with? What are the details of it? What's the prognosis? What's the treatment? What's going to happen between treatments? What's going to happen after treatment? So you almost empower yourself by getting the information about the diagnosis and the treatment further. The second one, which is something that we might focus on today, is empowering yourself with managing the conversations related to that. So how do I even begin to explain what cancer is? Most people, even adults, struggle to know what it is. So how do I empower myself in explaining it to a child, what the treatment will look like, what it will do, and all the emotional effects that will have between the two of us, not only the fears and anxieties of the child, but those of the parents too. And also the practical logistical things, conversations around going to hospital, taking medication, feeling weak, getting better, etc., etc. So you have to empower yourself with conversations about what the child has been diagnosed with, but also how to have these conversations and manage this, what would be a difficult situation further.
Because that series of conversations with a child who is younger than three, for example, is going to be a very different one from a teenager.
And essentially, maybe let me start at the end. The conversations are going to be different also at different times. So what we do know is with very young children, the conversations are important at the time that it's happening. They will be even more important much later when they understand what's happened to them. And I think that that's a trauma a lot of parents overlook, is that oftentimes it becomes traumatic once a child actually understands the gravity of what has happened. And that's oftentimes when they become teenagers and adolescents and they reflect like, oh my goodness, my life was in real danger. Whereas with the adolescent, because they can really appreciate or begin to appreciate the complexity of what's going on, that conversation is very frightening and to some extent a lot more complex to be had at the time. Though with both age groups, you need to be quite sensitive to where they are. Really begin by knowing who they are, what they know, what they do not know, and what you can expect from them, which will allow you to tailor the conversations further.
And throughout all of this, you as a parent need to show strength, because the child will look to you. So as you telling them about their cancer, they will probably focus on your eyes. They will focus on your body language and search for the fear in you. And if they find that you're a strong person, they'll probably will be a lot stronger in dealing with the devastating news.
Spot on. So I guess we ask parents to do something incredibly difficult, which is to straddle the line between being earnest and honest, as well as being containing. So what I mean by that is that on the one hand, you need a parent who is going to be able to access their own affect or emotional experiential responses and be able to model to the child that it's okay, for example, to feel a little bit frightened, to feel a little bit anxious, to be worried, to be confused, to be angry even. A parent that might be able to allow the child to see that in themselves, say, well, look, you know, I am also a little bit angry, that this has to happen. And I am also a little bit frightened. And that models for the child that it is okay for not only the child to have an emotional response to this, but how do I put it into words so that it doesn't manifest itself in all sorts of acting out behavior? And then the second part is, at the same time, the child needs to themselves be contained, because a frightened parent is going to frighten the child. So while we have this terribly complex thing that we're dealing with, we can deal with it. And that is a very contained parent. That's not necessarily stoic in the absence of affect. And at the same time, that shows a comfort to the child that says, we are going to manage this. It's a terrible time, though we can manage through it.
And talking about managing it, it sort of brings me to the next point that I want to highlight, because often the parents then want to fight the cancer, that is. The parents want to do everything possible to make sure that their child gets to see another birthday, another Christmas, another whatever day may be special to your child. And often that can be confusing, is it not? Because on the one hand, you've got a parent who's fighting and who's saying, we can do this. And on the other hand, you've got a child who's feeling weaker and weaker and weaker every day. And quite frankly, should probably be prepared about mortality and the fact that in the near future, there could be no life in that body anymore.
Absolutely. And I mean, we can go on with this conversation for a while, because even what you've just said, there's several key points. The first point, and I do not think you meant it in this way, though, you know, because I listen with many ears, is that you also get parents who do fight. So fight with each other. So reach points of frustration. And we know that frustration oftentimes, means that there's less patience and tolerance, and then they do fight. And so, how do you as a parenting couple, and when I say parenting couple, I suppose I just mean as a support system, the adult support system, manage your frustration and your tolerance at that time so that it does not spill over, it does not create, tension in the couple or just generally in the adult family life. And we can expand that. Thereafter, we absolutely still do have to hold on to the fact that it must be okay for the child or the adolescent to appreciate at points where they do want to give up, and that is not to say that that is going to be the aggregate experience. So what I mean by that is, you're right, at the best of times, the child will want to give up, and we need to have enough space to allow them to voice that, to say that, so that they can also recover from that and say, actually, while I wanted to give up, I want to continue to fight, and to stay with them the entire way, to track them in the process, knowing that it'll not always be we're okay and we're fighting and we're strong. Sometimes it'll be, I want to give up, and that's also okay.
That is okay. We'd love to hear from you. 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702. Has your child been diagnosed with cancer? Have you had to have this conversation with your child? At what age were they? And how did you navigate that conversation? Are you perhaps grappling with this issue right now? And we'd like some help from Zamombele, who is the clinical psychologist and board member at SADC. We take your calls on 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702. Your SMSs to 31567 and to 31702. In doing a throw forward to this show with Pippa Hudson, who was standing in for Kino on Cape Talk this morning, she raised a very important point that often this conversation has to extend to friends of that child. So if the child goes to kindergarten, for example, or primary school or high schooling, you often have to extend the conversation to those friends who can be a very vital support for their friend who has been diagnosed with cancer.
Yes, and you know, very briefly, there's several reasons for that. Firstly is that oftentimes when a child is sick, they also have the appreciation that this is contagious, or I got it from somewhere and I can give it to somebody. And with cancer, it's very different. So that's one very abstract or concrete conversation that you need to have. You have not gotten it from a friend or somebody at school, and you also cannot give it to somebody. The second one is the treatment related. So why am I going to be absent from school? Why am I going to be different from the other kids in terms of being able to attend things or do things or not, et cetera, et cetera. So those are the conversations that you have with the child, though, as you say, with maybe the class or the friends. My child won't be able to do this, that, and the other, and this is why. It's not like there's something wrong with them or they're bad, though this has happened.
We're taking your calls, your experiences, your questions after the news on the numbers 021-446-0567 as indicated if you're calling from Cape Talk Land, 011-883-0702 if you're calling from 702 Land. Your SMS is 231567 and 231702. Remembering, of course, that standard rates do apply. My guest is Zabo Mbele, who's a clinical psychologist and board member at SEDEC.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
And we're talking about how children cope with cancer, how the parent can help that child navigate the challenge of coping with cancer, and how you break the news to them. We're taking your calls on 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702. My guest this hour is clinical psychologist Zamo Mbele. Zamo, your first call is from Sandy in Benoni. Hello, Sandy.
Hi, I'm a pathology nurse. So in the position, my great nephew, with 18 months old, was born with neuroblastoma. Anyhow, so he went through all the treatment. He was too little to understand. But by the time he started going to school, his hair had fallen out, and all the kids in his class had their hair shaved off, and they all wore beanies to school, which I thought was fantastic.
It is fantastic, yeah. Sandy. It really, really is. To have your classmates show that level of support to you is something that I imagine any parent would pray for.
Yeah, and she said the support they've received. I mean, in remission now, but he's done fantastic well. And she said she cannot fault the service one bit from the doctors, the nursing staff, the school, everything. The support backup was fantastic.
Zamo was saying earlier that as a parent who's needing to have this conversation with your child, you need to have a series of conversations. He was 18 months when he was diagnosed. I believe he's about seven years old now. So how have you managed the conversation around cancer with him over all these years?
Well, he's one of a twin. So obviously the twin is much bigger. And then they said, you're sick, and this is what's going to happen. You're into hospital, you're going to have needles put in, they're going to make you better. They've gone through it that way, and he got his own way, like in the hospital. He wasn't little, he didn't want a cot, he wanted a big bed. So the professor said, give him a big bed. And things like that, but he's absolutely managed, and he knows. He goes through his scans regularly still, but he, you know, they just, our kids do accept far easier than parents do. And I'm sure the person that you're talking to will see exactly the same.
Exactly.
I did a long period of pediatric oncology, and it was the best nursing.
Sandin Benoni, thank you very much for sharing your story with us. And she mentions that, Zamo, that often kids are much better at dealing with this than parents are.
Well, younger people, for example, will not appreciate, for example, the idea that this, what I have, can be terminal. It's really serious. What they appreciate is the idea that they have to go to a hospital and they have to miss school and they cannot play and they cannot sleep and they're being poked and prodded. So a lot of their difficulties or discomfort come in when they are actually being confronted with the treatment. Outside of that, so when they're not in hospital or having to go for any sort of treatment, it oftentimes leaves their minds. So it's an out of sight, out of mind, lack of object permanence that we know for kiddies. And really that's all it means. And that makes it a lot more bearable for them. It also means that parents must then consider, this when working with them, is that really when they're, especially the younger children's kind of under five, when they are not in treatment, they're oftentimes not thinking about it so much. With that said, and Sandy is right, you also do need to do a lot of structural predictions. We're going to the hospital on Monday, on Tuesday. So speaking to them ahead of time so that they can prepare their own minds, for example, in a disruption of schedule. And when we get there, this is what's going to happen, et cetera, et cetera. I want to take this moment, and I know I'm speaking a lot, to say one other thing. And that is something else that is really important, is to help the young mind appreciate that there is something in you that needs to be treated, and it's not you that is wrong. So what we see oftentimes with young people is that they struggle to make the distinction that there is something inside of me that is wrong, as opposed to that I am the bad person and I am being almost punished even, which can be the fantasy or the idea, the imagination of a young person.
There's a question from Vivian, whose son is 34 years old and is in denial of his condition, does not want to talk about it. How, as a family, do we support and start the conversation? Unfortunately, Vivian doesn't detail what the condition is.
You see, denial is can be one of two things. There's a denial that's not helpful, a denial that says, I'm not going to go seek treatment, I'm not going to engage with this helpfully, and that needs to be confronted head on, you know. And at the best of times, the confrontation of it might need to have supportive structures that say, while you are in denial, we're going to make certain that your denial isn't fatal, so to speak. There's a second denial, especially for young people, which we must engage with, and that is a defensive denial. Without getting too technical, that's when a young mind cannot bear to think or to manage with what it is that they've been told. And so they deny it themselves. And that denial can be protective to the extent that the parents continue to make certain that treatment carries on. Now, this denial can be managed too by being patient and gentle and affording the person enough time and space to kind of come out of the denial in a very, very coddled way as well. So to maintain the presence of having the conversation and to continue to afford information and also to reflect why the person might be in denial, which might be it is scary. So, of course, it's hard for you to appreciate or to admit that this is going on.
We're taking your calls on 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Your SMSs to 31567 and 231702. Are you having a conversation of this nature with your child? Have you had to in the recent while? How did it go? We often learn that there's the theory that Zamo is obviously sharing with us, learnt no doubt from years and years of experience as a psychologist, but it's your experience that many of our listeners will be learning from and picking up tools that they can use in navigating this conversation, because it is a very, very difficult one to have with your child, no doubt. And after the break, we'll also be talking about what happens when you as the parent is the one that is diagnosed with cancer. What happens when you have to tell your child, I will not be here for your wedding. I will not be here for your 21st birthday party. I will not be here for your graduation. How do you deal with that kind of complexity? Issues of mortality that are very difficult for us to navigate in most times. 021-446-0567 or 011-883-0702.
702 and Cape Talk. Family Matters.
We're talking about the very difficult subject that parents will have to navigate at some point, sadly, that of telling your children that they have cancer and coping with that. We are joined in our Joburg studios by clinical psychologist and SADAG board member Uzabo Mbele. Falumi in Ronnebosch is the next call for you, Zamo. Good morning, Falumi.
Good morning to you, and thank you very much for paying some attention to a very important subject.
Thank you very much, Falumi.
I would just like to share with listeners the Cancer Alliance. Alliance is an alliance of nearly 30 cancer-minded non-profit organizations in South Africa, and readers can go onto our website, www.canceralliance.co.za. And on there, under our membership page, you can find a number of cancer support organizations that provide support services to cancer patients and their families to deal with this, specifically the topic that is being discussed.
And Falumi, through your alliance organization and I suppose the associated members to that organization... for some reason, Falumi not being able to continue the conversation. But Sidwe, Zamo, she does highlight a very important issue, that of support, because you're not the first parent to go through this with your child. You certainly will not be the last, and you'll often find that there are many, many other parents who are going through it at the very same time as you.
Well, we know now that how we treat cancer and related illnesses is not just through the medication or the physiology of it. An essential part, just as important, is the support. How do we support the individual who's going through it, and how do we support those who will be going through it with the individual? And that's incredibly important, and that's one of the reasons you and I are having this conversation this morning. It's one of the reasons, as SADC, we are launching a speaking book specifically for children and how to cope with cancer, because not only will that help the child, but it will help those who are helping the child, and that's the parents. How do we support them too? And this, and these speaking books will not only make the process of going through treatment accessible to children in their own languages, but also for the parents to understand themselves as well.
All right. And what will be contained in this speaking book?
So I suppose the speaking book goes through the process of what is cancer and what is the treatment of cancer. And at the moment, we are partnering with key people to make it available in the vernacular of South Africa. Because, of course, we know that in South Africa, there are approximately 1,000 cases, new cases of pediatric cancer reported annually. And those are just the ones that are reported or treated. The number could easily double if everybody were to come forward. And with that number, a lot of the individuals going through it cannot access not only the treatment or the understanding of it because of a language, which is why we need to create a platform where information is given. The information is given in an accessible way, and that is in a vernacular.
How, I suppose, I'm just trying to think of how would I have this conversation in Xhosa with my four-year-old nephew if I had to have it. Because a lot of the jargon, a lot of the terminology that we use is very much based not only on the English language, but often the Latin language, which is where obviously a lot of the medical terms come from. And I'm not sure I've ever come across terminology or words that can be used in the Xhosa vernacular language to actually help me have this conversation with a four-year-old nephew.
And there's no perfect way or the best way, and I agree with you. Part of the difficulty is that in our vernacular and many around the world, there is no absolute translatable word, for example, for tumor. And at the same time, what you can do is to break it down to the most basics of it, which is there is something inside of me that is growing, that should not be growing, that I need to go to hospital for treatment, which will go on for a while. So I need to go again and again. So almost to be able to find a way to simplify it as much as possible to create an accessible language, actually not even just to children, though also to adults. And I suppose at the moment we're focusing a little bit on how to speak to young people when you as a parent or an uncle, whatever the case is, are struggling with an illness. And to even admit at the best of times that I am not even 100% certain, or I do not have all of the knowledge of what is wrong with me or what is wrong inside of me, though I do know that together we can figure it out as we're going along.
Kathy asking a very important question on the SMS line. Hi guys, my child has been in and out of hospital. I've been able to make it exciting for her. She's 6 years old, suffering from bone marrow form of cancer. Now she cries and has to be sedated. How can I make the experience less painful for her? And I imagine Kathy refers to both the physical painfulness of the process, but also the emotional painfulness of the process that she's going through right now.
And the pediatricians will tell you that unfortunately at the best of times there's very little to be done to make the physical experience less painful. Though then us as the psychologists will come in and tell you that one must not underestimate how the containment of the emotion will absolutely make it more bearable. So it'll contain the pain as well. And that is what is done before, for example, the treatment, and absolutely what is done afterwards. Being able to put into words what the pain was, where it was, how it affected them, how was it scary, where was it located inside of their bodies as well, and what can be done to contain them, to make it better, to make them feel better inside, even though on the skin or in the body, it feels absolutely horrible. Though all of this done without negating the fact that it will unfortunately be painful as well. And that admittance and that acknowledgement is really helpful for a child so that they do not almost imagine that they themselves are imagining this pain or they're inflicting it on themselves. And lastly is also a conversation around why this pain is happening. So there would be a confusion around, you say this is making me better, though it's making me feel really horrible, and to engage that it's making you feel horrible for now so that it can be better in the future. And then the second point, which a lot of children attribute this to, is that I'm not being punished, or you are not being punished for feeling this pain. You have not done something wrong. Because up until that point, a lot of the times when children feel pain, it's because of a punishment. So making clarities, points of clarities that are really simple and at the same time so important.
We haven't even begun to discuss the notion of religion in this case, because some children obviously are brought up in the faith, Christian, Judaism, Muslim, Hindu, whatever the case may be. And often the questions of where is God? Why is God doing this to me? Are the difficult conversations that parents need to navigate.
Absolutely. And I suppose, again, the parents themselves will have had to negotiate that or have that processed in themselves. Have at least a basic or a fundamental opinion or understanding on how that will be so that they can help a young person access it too. One comment to make here is a caution around getting too abstract, even with adolescents, though a caution around holding too many symbols and abstractions in mind, because we know that abstract thought develops, I suppose, as the young person develops. So the insertion of too many abstractions can oftentimes lead to more confusion than any sort of cohesion and thought.
Let's take a call from Max in Cape Town. Hello, Max.
Hi, Fugis. I guess my first comment is just a lot of love and blessings to those families who are having to experience that really deep pain. I've had lots of experience in my family, and I think maybe a comment or it could be taken as a question is I feel part of this, especially when dealing with youngsters, is how do I deal with my own repressed emotions, traumas, wounds, and my own consciousness that affects my biology, that partly also helped, you know, perhaps has partly made me more sick, and then how do I allow that truth to come out to my children, because I think children pick up very subtle energies and very subtle anxieties, and as parents we want to protect our children, but at the same time I think, you know, repressing our emotions more to not share what's really going on, I think we do ourselves and our families a disservice. So I guess the question is how do we not put the cap on repressing more when we're getting more anxious and more worried about our own livelihood and our own, you know, our own ability to live, and at the same time be able to share that with our children who are probably feeling it already, whether we're saying it or not.
That's an important point to raise, Max. Thank you very much for raising it. Zamo?
Let me jump in. Let me make three brief points, because that's a brilliant call. The first one is that an important distinction to make oftentimes with cancer in children and in adults is that the child has not done anything, so to speak, oftentimes to contribute to their diagnosis. Whereas with adults, oftentimes it is related to a lifestyle and choices one has made consciously or unconsciously, advertently or inadvertently. Though what can happen for a parent is that they can then feel the extreme guilt of what have I given my child or what did I not give them in order for them to have this diagnosis. And that can be unconscious, though must be brought into a conversation with the child and themselves. The second point is that oftentimes we know that with a cancer, even post-resolution, what it can bring up are the fact that one day one will pass on. And it can really begin that conversation too, a reflection on one's mortality and immortality, whether it's successfully treated or not. And when that is again not explored appropriately, it can obviously lead to a lot of negative acting out. And then the last one is a kind of a generic or general comment around the idea that whenever somebody or a family goes through this, of course it would be important for them as a family to begin to have ongoing conversations on what was it like for you, what was it like for you, and to hear each other and to share in their own fantasies or their imaginations or what came to their minds, so that they can make sense of it as a collective as well, because this is an illness that sits in the collective, isn't it?
Max, Cindy, our thoughts are with you and your family as well. Thank you very much for your call. Our final question on this call, rather, on this topic is Flo from Benoni. Hello, Flo.
Hello there. I'm an old lady of almost 82 years old, and I've been living with colon cancer for 11 years. Well, I've got a bag, and it's too terrible for words. And now the last 18 months, I've got two cancer lumps in my left lung. And I've got to see the oncologist every 6 months. I see him again in September. But I've got no pain. But just to say, my family, my late husband, who passed away 2 years ago, he was very good about, you know, the cancer I had in my stomach and my two daughters. But my two daughters now have coped well with me as well psychologically. But they say they take their hat off to me as far as the colostomy is concerned, because it's not a nice thing to live with. And so that's my story.
Flo, and I imagine having the kind of support you've had from your family has been absolutely critical in you being able to survive cancer.
Yes. It's been a long, hard road, and but my two daughters have been fabulous. And as I say, my late husband, he wasn't too happy. He never looked at the the stomach and that and the bag and that. And now I've got a massive hernia around the stoma bag, and the oncologist says it's too big an operation to remove that, and my age counts against me because I'll be 82 in June.
Flo, we certainly wish you the best with your treatment. Thank you very much for making the call. Zamo, that gives you just enough seconds to share your final thoughts on this topic.
My first thought goes out to all the people, obviously, who are struggling with this and related matters, because it can be incredibly difficult. What Flo's call points out is the fact that it can have physical impacts on one, and it oftentimes leaves scars. Related to that, an absolute in conclusion, is that it absolutely also leaves emotional scars, and we need to attend to those just as much as well, because oftentimes when the cancer is gone, what is left is the individual, and that individual must be left with an ability to carry on with everything that is of them and is of what is left of their lives as well.
Zamo, thank you very much indeed for joining us at this hour. It's a very difficult but very important conversation that we need to have. And if you and your family are navigating this, please do so with care, with kindness, and with a lot of love.